Welcome to the Sober Gay Sunday podcast, a podcast about being gay and sober and not just on Sundays. In this podcast, we'll explore the ins and outs of being queer and sober in a world where drinking and using is woven into the fabric of our culture. This season, we'll be hearing the stories of addiction and recovery from sober gays from all over the world. Every story of recovery is unique in its own way, and every story deserves to be heard. So let's go. In this episode, we welcome Chris. Chris is originally from the Berkshires in Massachusetts. He now resides on the South Shore of Boston with his partner Mark and two rescue dogs. He identifies as bisexual and has never been happier in his sobriety. Please welcome Chris. Hey, Chris, welcome to the pod.
Hey, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Why don't you start off by telling us your name, your preferred pronouns, and just a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Chris. I use he, him pronouns. I'm originally from the Berkshires, the mountains of Massachusetts, but I have been living out on the South Shore for about 9 years now. I have a house in Hanson with my long-term partner of 8 years and our dogs.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. I love that. All right, so why don't you start us off by telling us about your first drinking or using experience, and then just taking us through your journey up until where you're at now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know exactly when this was. It was probably about, I want to say like 10. I do remember an occurrence of sneaking into my parents' closet, their like coat closet, and my dad had his 30 rack of Pabst there, and my mom had her box of Franzia there, because, you know, they only drank high shelf stuff. And I remember like cracking one of my dad's Pabst and being like, oh my god, this is so salty, this is disgusting, like, and just curious really, like, what the big deal was, like,
yeah.
And then I was like, oh no, I got this figured out, I'll try some of my mom's Franzia. And that was like, and my mom really didn't drink Franzia. I don't know what that was doing in there. And that was so bitter. And I was like, this is disgusting. What is wrong with them? Like,
yeah.
And just being like, this isn't for me. And just deciding like, and I didn't finish either. I think I just poured both of them out and like disposed of them so I wouldn't get caught. But I was like, this is not for me. They're, I don't know what they find appealing about this, but I do. So when I was about 16 years old, I got one of my gay friends moved in with his partner, and they had a guy living with them. And I started to go over there every weekend, and I got introduced to flavored vodkas, and I completely fell in love. Like, it was my first love, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with like the feeling that alcohol gave me, the like warm feeling, the like the invulnerability, like the ability to be able to talk and to just like have a good time. And I was like, I was hooked right from there.
So then after that, what happened? Did you continue to drink throughout your like college? Did you go to college? Did you have a college experience with drinking?
Yeah. So if I could just back up for a second, I spoke about, so I think when I was born, my parents lived in a studio apartment, but I really only ever remember growing up in like the trailer parks, because that's where they could afford. And both my parents were alcoholics. And my dad was the kind of alcoholic who has a bunch of drinks at the end of the night and then gets like violent with his buddies and obnoxious. And my mom was the kind of alcoholic who wouldn't drink all the time, but when she did drink, she would like disappear for like weeks at a time. Wow. She was like the zombie mom. And when I was growing up, both these things just like really bothered me. It left me with a big sense of like abandonment and insecurity, like what was wrong with me, maybe that like made them kind of ignore me. And so I just want to say that I don't blame my parents at all for me turning out to be an alcoholic because, you know, if anything, those things should have been warning signs that like convinced me never to drink. But I don't begrudge them any of this. They did the best they could with what they had and the money they had and the knowledge that they had at the time. I was a fat child, and they weren't big on like early intervention learning. So I was kind of a stupid child. I was also wrestling with like my identity, which I was too young to really understand at that point. So all these things just made me realize as a child, like I was different than most people. And I hated that. I just wanted to be like everybody else. I wanted to be thin like all the people on TV. And I wanted to be smart, like, you know, at least like not in the small reading rooms, which is where I was for like lower grade school. And I just wanted to fit in with everybody. And we were like in the trailer park, so we were also poor. So, and I wanted to like, I just wanted to feel like a lot of my friends. So, like early on, I decided these things aren't gonna exist as I age. Like I developed like a fierce resolution to change my life, and I did. When I was in middle school, I lost a ton of weight. Something in my head just clicked too. I'd always been really good with math, and I used that and parlayed that to get myself into all the honors classes, and I took all those classes super seriously. And it got to the point that when I graduated from high school, I graduated the second with the second highest GPA in my class. Nice. And I decided that I was going to turn all that stuff around, and I think the only thing that I've never been able to really will change within is like my alcoholism and the way I drink. To answer your question, yes, my drinking started like at 16. And it didn't really, I do remember in like late high school, always getting nervous when I would buy like 3 racks of Rolling Rock and always getting nervous when they were getting low in my like mini fridge in my room.
Yeah.
But drinking for me really took off in high school. Me and my best friend at the time, I'd had this best friend for like 6 years. We decided we were going to go to UMass Amherst together. And that probably wasn't a great choice for me in retrospect, you know, the zoo, Slamhurst, big party school. Yeah. But I came from such a rural mountain town that I like really wanted to taste life. I really wanted to have other people around, especially other queer people. Like that was something that there was only a handful of in my hometown. And so I really wanted to just be exposed to like everything that I could be exposed to. And then like right away, my drinking started to get me in trouble. I remember like this first, they had one of their first gay big kind of dance parties. It was like maybe the second or third weekend of my first term. And we all like played Kings in the dorm to pregame, of course. And then I used to be so good at Kings, something I can't do anymore. I remember we were all walking there and I like decided to run because running is a great idea when you're drunk. And I like fell and I like busted up half my face, but that wasn't going to slow me down. I was like bleeding down half my face, but I was going to make it to that party. And I did like, and we were standing in line waiting for to like be let into this party. I don't even know if they would have let me in, but I really had to go to the bathroom, as drunk people do. And so I snuck around the building and I like peed on a bush in the back. And when I turned around, there was like a cop there, and he noticed I was bleeding profusely and I just like peed, which is technically like public nudity. And so I was in trouble. And I right away I concocted this story that like my roommate had hit me and like
Wow.
that they should feel bad for me. And that I don't know what they believed of that, but I did end up getting PC'd, and my best friend who I spoke of, who we decided on going to UMass together. They eventually got a hold of him, and he came down to the station, and he like signed whatever kind of paperwork he had to sign to let me out. And they gave all my belongings to him, and we like started walking back to my dorm. And that was like what they told him is just get him back to his dorm, get him to sleep, and you can leave. And I really wanted to smoke a cigarette because I had just been through like an ordeal. And he didn't want to give me my cigarettes. He was like, I'll give them to you as soon as we get to the dorm. He had never really been fond of my smoking because his mom had passed away like 6 years before of cancer. And he had never really super approved of that. And I knew that. But I was drunk and I wanted my cigarettes. So I tried to persuade him a couple times, and then when that didn't work, I pushed him to the ground. I took my bag of possessions and I walked home myself. And that was the last time I got to speak to him. And at first I was really mad at him. I do remember being like super mad at him. Like I knew that I had done wrong, but I had we had been friends for like 6 years, so that's like a third of our life at that point. And I felt very much like abandoned again. Like he had just kind of given up on our friendship over me doing one stupid thing. And I totally respect his decision, and it was all out of line. And but basically this is if this was if my book if my life was a book, this is what you would call foreshadowing of things to come. Basically, just my drinking progressed in college much similarly to that. I used to drink because I thought it made me make friends, but in truth, alcohol has lost me every friend it almost ever made me. It basically just continued that way in college. I had a lot of I'm bisexual. I had a lot of I took a lot of hostages drinking career. And I realized recently, like while doing my fifth step, like I've hurt a lot of people with my words and with my fists. But I
Yeah.
think the worst way that I've ever hurt another individual is by through my love, my drunken love, by letting them by dragging them in so closely and then inflicting them, like letting them experience the hurricane that is my addiction and me while using and just tearing their life apart as well as my own. Like, and this left me with like a lot of broken romances, with a lot of broken friendships. Because I treated a lot of my friends the same way in college. And so it got to a point where a lot of people had mentioned, like, you drink dangerously, you drink differently than a lot of people. And whenever I heard that, I kind of pushed those people away. I didn't want to hear that. So I would disband that person, and they wouldn't be a part of my life anymore. And so it got to where at the end of college, I did have to take a couple semesters off during college because honestly, drinking had just become such a problem that I called my parents and I was like, I don't want to do school right now. I kind of want to come home and drink. And they came and got me because they didn't, super support the drinking, but they came and got me and they brought me home and I just spent semesters drinking and not really doing much else. But it got to the I did get through college, not with the degree I wanted exactly, but I ended up majoring in I wanted to be a neurosurgeon because my little brother suffers from epilepsy. And I decided long ago I was gonna be the cure for, I was gonna become the I was gonna get the degree and figure out a cure for that. And you know, slowly alcohol just brought that all down. I changed my major a couple different times. What I eventually ended up getting out with was a major in neuropsychology and a minor in biology. But basically what those two things correlate to is I just majored in mind control. I just majored in ways to further exploit people and exploit their feelings and manipulate them to my will. I am a master manipulator at my heart. And it got to the near the end of college where I was just living in single like I never left the campus, but single dorms and single rooms. And those were probably like the darkest days of my addiction because I was all by myself and no one really knew what was going on with me. All the people, like my friends, had checked out by this time. So I was just drinking a lot by myself, and it was very much like a detox because I would on Tuesday or like Thursday or Friday, I would go down to the store, get like my booze for the weekend. And then proceed to drink Thursday, Friday, maybe half of Saturday, and then spend like the rest of Saturday and Sunday and maybe part of Monday detoxing in my room. And I do say detoxing because I drank so dangerously that I've had a couple alcoholic seizures as part of my like coming out of drinking binges, and those aren't fun. Like if you've ever woken up on the floor and had no idea why you got there, it's not fun. So it was very much like a detox, but I was the only patient, and I was also the warden, which makes for like a terrible situation. You know, I know I've had at least two seizures, but honestly, it could be many more because I was alone most of that time. I did end up getting out of college. And really I thought that was gonna be it was gonna maybe even put an end to my like dangerous drinking. I could get away from school, get away from like the stress of school and like start my life. And it obviously nothing changed. I ended up moving in with a friend who I had lived with previously during high school in the Worcester area with her and her husband and for about 6 months. And at first things were good. She's an admitted alcoholic too. Things were really good for a while. You know, we would both drink sometimes. They smoked weed. Weed is a big part of my story. Slowly kind of the same thing just started to happen again. I would kind of disappear into my room on the weekends. I would like stay there. I would shut the blinds because the sun hurt after drinking like for 3 days straight. And she kind of this kind of bothered her. And she kind of mentioned it a few times. I had gotten just a couple crappy jobs just to pay the rent and to continue my drinking. It got to a point where I was so I have these like degrees and all this science background, and I was pumping gas at this gas station, and some cops came along and they found me like passed out at the desk because I had been drinking at work. I don't think I've ever had a job where I haven't been drinking, not every day at it, but definitely drinking at some point during a hit. And they found me passed out. I woke up. I was like, oh my God, I'm fine. I'm fine. And they sent me to the hospital. And I lost that job, but she found out. I think they called her. And she had found out I had been in the hospital, and this was just kind of too much for her. So she told me I couldn't live there anymore. And then, so I moved back to the Berkshires for just like the briefest of whiles. And then, my boyfriend, who is my partner still now, kind of came to my rescue and was like, I'm gonna move you out to come live with me out on the South Shore and of Boston, and you know, we'll get this right. And so that's what I did. He was living with his mom his aunt at the time, and him and his mom were actually sharing a bedroom. So I moved in to his bed and his room with his mom, and like he got me a job at the place he was working, and for a little while I continued to kind of drink. I didn't have a car at the time, so I would borrow his, and I would drunk drive it around and to work. And he was like the supervisor at the job that I had gotten. And I showed up once like plastered, and he saw that and was like, you have to go home. And I went out to the parking lot, and I got what I thought was his car, and took a nap, I guess. And then somebody like knocked on the door and was like, why are you in my car? And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like,
Wow.
and like thankfully they ran away. And I got in his car and drove drunk back to our place. I kind of tried to seek help at this point. I went to like my general doctor, and I was like, I want to be put on antabuse, please. And they were like, we don't do that here. And but they did like get me some numbers, and they set me up with a nurse practitioner, and she gave me shots of Vivitrol
Yeah.
which at first I think I made myself believe it worked, but for me I don't think it was super effective. I was still drinking and driving a lot around. We did end up, me and him lived with his mom for like 6 months, but we did end up getting an apartment. And we got our first dog, and we lived there for about 3 years, and just like still the drinking continued. After like about a month or two of living on the South Shore, he took my license and my bank cards, my credit cards, which I agreed to because I was really just looking for like any way to stop drinking. But as like any addict will know, like there's always gonna be a way, and I always found a way to like either like steal my card back for a little while, or like write myself a check, or like do all this like insane stuff
Yeah.
to continue drinking. It was crazy. I remember, this is like one of the craziest things. When we were living at this apartment, it was on the third story. And it would get to be like the weekends, and we usually both had the weekends off. And I would tell him I was gonna go take a shower, and then I would go into our like little tiny bathroom, and I would turn the water on. And then I would proceed to climb down the fire escape. Like I had already put like sandals in the bathroom and like shorts,
Wow.
and I would proceed to like climb down three flights on the fire escape, and then run right across the street to the giant liquor store that was there, and buy like a couple sleeves, and then run back up the stairs and get back in the shower, and then like wet my hair to make him believe that I had showered.
Yeah.
And just like absolute craziness. I remember once, I think I was going to get my Vivitrol, and no, I wasn't. I had decided that I was gonna take the dog on a car ride, which was weird. I think I was trying to find like a park for us to walk in,
Yeah.
which was again odd because we would have just walked by the house. I have no idea why I was doing this. And I like hit a curb and popped both of my passenger side tires, my crappy brick phone at the time, like, decided to die. Isn't that always the way of it? At that exact moment. And it was like the middle of day outside. I have no idea what time it was, but like the sun was still out. And so I couldn't get a hold of anybody. I didn't have any money, so I couldn't like go ask somebody. I couldn't go use a payphone. I didn't really want anyone to see me completely like shit faced and the car fucked up and like maybe get a DUI in retrospect. And so I like took the dog into the backseat and I like curled up and really like we took a really long nap until it was very dark outside. And then I woke up. I guess my plan was to wake up in the morning and be sober and find a phone. But I was like, no, this is fine. We'll just drive home now. And I'm not from this area or like from the South Shore, so I don't really know where things are. So I just started driving aimlessly until I like did find something I recognized, and I did find my way home. But as I had mentioned, like the tires were popped on the passenger side. So I just drove home on the rims, and I have no idea how I didn't get caught because it must have made like a racket. The smell was terrible. Like, and yeah, just absolutely crazy how I didn't get caught. But like when I think back on that, like I think that's like the incident of driving drunk that I regret the most, because my dog was in the car, and you know, if they had pulled me over, they probably could have taken him and taken him for good. And I love that dog. I know he's not like a child, but he's like my child.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just how scared he must have been. Like, what the fuck is happening? Why are we sleeping in a car? Like, why is daddy like crazy out of his mind right now? What is all this noise and smell? And, yeah, so I just really regret that one the most, I think. Because I still have that dog, and I still look at him sometimes, and I still think, like, I know he doesn't remember, but I remember.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was tough. And you know, obviously, like, my partner was sitting at home, and I was like, yeah, this is terrible, and this is never going to happen again. And I'm sure for a while I stopped drinking for a while. You know, I never really stopped drinking. I like I had mentioned before, I wasn't the kind of person who needed to drink every single day.
Yeah.
But when I did drink, it usually like parlayed into binges until basically I either got caught or ran out of money or like some combination. And I would always feel really guilty sobering up, because he was just, I had hurt him so much. I have hurt him so much with all of my drinking. And I would promise, I like would see the hurt and I would be like, I'm so sorry, you know, I'm gonna stop, I'm gonna be better. But it never really clicked. Like, I never had the willpower. So it got to be time. We were in the apartment for about 3 years. We did get a house, my house in Hanson that I own now. And we had only lived here for like a couple months. And we were both at work at our new jobs. I decided, I think I had been drinking all day, but I had decided to go out on lunch and get more nips. Again, kind of found myself in a place I didn't like recognize, and just decided I was going to find out how to get back to work myself. And like, and I don't really remember a ton of that. I do remember like I was speeding down like side streets and stuff, and I ended up hitting a tree. I can only really remember like a second before hitting the tree, and then like smashed my car into a tree and woke up, and the police and ambulance people were like the jaws of life ing me out of a car, and like there was even nips in like the driver's side door. But I think the first thing I had told them was like my blood sugar is low or something to that effect, and they, which is a complete lie, I don't have diabetes, and I feel bad about that one too, because one of my half brothers does have type 1 diabetes, and it's like a real thing, but I just, again, used it. I just lied to like get my to get out of a situation. And I don't know, they believed it enough where they got me to a hospital, and I had fractured my sacrum, like a lower part of my spine, and the airbag had deploded, and it had burnt away like a good chunk of my like forearm. And I think that might have been like the worst of it. I was like cut up and banged up, but I was like mainly okay. But I had like gotten away with like my second big instance of driving drunk and having like penalties. And just for a long time, my drinking had like very little consequences. Like maybe people would leave, but people are replaceable, I thought back then. And you know, maybe I would get in trouble with the law, but that had not happened yet. So again, I this time it really did sicken me. Like the damage, that car was totaled. Just like the sick, like the amount of damage I had done to like I could have like hit a child or a, you know, anybody. And it really just disgusted me. So I do remember stopping to drink for like a couple months again. And but you know, I eventually picked up again, and it just it was like it had never happened. And I eventually got a new job from that job with him. He still works there. I got a different job for a while, for about 3 years, and while I was at this new job, they decided I was kind of like inside sales and customer service management. They decided they wanted me to go to their big sales meeting, and they had they put me up for like 3 days at the Marabou in like in Plymouth, which is like this gorgeous resort like hotel. And I remember calling my dad like the day I got super drunk the first night, threw up in my bed in the beautiful like gorgeous bed. And I remember calling my dad the next morning and being like, "Dad, there's like water fountains outside my window, and there's ambient music playing from somewhere that I can't even find like to turn off," or not that I wanted to, but I was like, "I've made it." Like,
Right.
and he was like, "Yeah, don't fuck it up." And and I did.
And shocker.
So I made it through most of the sales conference, which is shocking. We had these big drinking nights, but that was like never good enough for me. I was big into morning drinking. I never wanted to like feel that hangover, or once you've had a seizure, like you don't want to have another one. And I knew that if I could at least get some booze into my system, I wouldn't seize. So that was the cause of a lot of my morning drinking. And I also like to kind of be like still half asleep and still like and then already gone like to the world. Like there was something about that feeling I enjoyed. And so I would we would drink heavy at night, and I would like wake up early and go find a liquor store in the vicinity and buy a bunch of nips and be drinking all day at this conference. And it just got worse and worse every day. So the conference had actually ended. We were set to do like one more group activity, and I decided I wasn't gonna do it. I drove back to my house, and I woke up on the floor with a bunch of nips and some voice messages from my boss saying like, "Where'd you go? Like, what happened to you?" And I realized I didn't have my laptop either, and so I called him back. I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll meet you guys at the thing. I forgot my laptop and I'm not feeling well, and I have to go get my laptop first." So I went back. I was already home, like safe, and I could have gotten my laptop another time, but I was like afraid someone would steal it or something, and I would get in trouble at work for it. So I drove back to Plymouth drunk. The hotel like couldn't find it, so that was like a an exercise in futility anyway. So then I left and was presumably driving home again when the police pulled me over. I think I had like hit a curve with my passenger tires and ended up on the side of a road. But some people had noticed like reckless driving and had called the police, and the police pulled me over. And I tried to use the low blood sugar story again, but they weren't buying that. And so that all accumulated in, they took me to, I think it was like the middle of the day too. It was like 2 in the afternoon. They took me to Plymouth County Courthouse, and they booked me. Oh, no. First, they took me to the hospital because they did want to check my blood sugar. And the nurse was like very mean to me, and rightfully so. And
very mean.
She was like, you don't have, like, your blood sugar is normal, so we're going to give you some insulin. And I was like, I don't know if that can hurt you if you're, like, not diabetic.
Right, yeah.
And so I was like, no, I'm allergic to that. And she's like, you're a diabetic who's allergic to insulin. And I was like, I know, I should be dead. I'm so brave.
Oh, no.
And, she was not having any of it. The cops did treat me pretty nice that time. But anyway, then they took me to the police station and booked me. And I remember just being like so broken at that point. Like I like my luck had run out, and my mom had passed like a year or two prior to that. And they put me in the cell, and I was all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to talk to her so bad. So I like willed her there somehow. I was probably still pretty drunk. But I somehow think it was like more than that. She was like more than memory. I like somehow conjured her sitting on the cell, the bench with me. And she didn't say anything. But I said how sorry I was, and she like understood, and she just kind of kept me company for a while, and eventually they got a hold of my partner. They gave me my phone call. I called him. I was like, I'm in, because he hadn't actually heard from me for a few days because I was at the sales conference, and I was like, I'm in Plymouth County Court. I need you to come pick me up. And he was like, you're not funny. And I was like, I'm not joking.
Yeah.
And he was pissed. And again, like rightfully so. And he came to get me and they released me to him. And I remember driving home, and I remember him being like, some things have got to change. And I remember like yelling at him, like this was his fault. Like that he, like, I know, I've just been through, like, the ordeal of the century, like, you don't need to tell me anything I don't know, and I just I've been so terrible to him through this addiction, but he's never left my side, like everybody else has.
Thank you for tuning in to the Sober Gay Sunday podcast. Please come back next week for the conclusion of this incredible episode. Please take a moment to like, subscribe, share, and comment. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at SoberGaySunday. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, stay sober, guys. I'm so sick of small talk, and tell me something, you're dropping in me on my head with your biggest mistakes. I don't want your daily drama, fill me in on family traumas, tell me all the medication that you take. Life's so short, we're playing so fast.